105 Drive with Julian Clover.
Ian Packham has visited 31 countries and travelled around 25,000 miles over 13 months using transport only available to local populations. It's all involved in a project in which he circumnavigated, is just about the right word, around the coastline of Africa. And I'm pleased to say that Ian is with me now. Hello.
Hello.
Thank you for coming into Cambridge 105. Now, when did you get back?
Got back September 2012.
And you spent that rest of the time, I guess, writing the book in front of me here. So what was the gem, if you like, of the idea which set you off around Africa in the first place?
Do you know what? I don't really have one. I was just staring at an atlas trying to work out what sort of slightly longer-term travel I wanted to do, and Africa just sort of stared back at me, and it just looked so intriguing, and it's such a diverse place, and we don't hear very much about it, actually, so that's kind of why I wanted to go.
Had you been travelling before?
I'd only been on holidays for 3 weeks or so, nothing long-term before.
Right, so this was quite a dramatic shift, really, as anything else by the sounds of things. So how did you plan it? Did you just sort of say, right, I'm going to set off, I'm going to land here, and round I go, or was it a little bit more complicated?
Following the coast made it fairly easy planning the route, so it was just reading as much as I could, really, and getting in contact with anyone who'd been to the places I was going and seeing what they had to say about the place.
Mm. Did you have planned to meet up with people as you sort of went around, just to make sure that there was, if you like, a friendly face to speak to?
I managed to meet up with a few people along the way, but actually I was moving on every day, so being in the right town at the time that these people were available actually became quite difficult.
Yeah. So tell us about the transport, because you didn't just set off and, you know, hire a car at the first point you landed. You decided to use public transport, and I guess specifically the kind of public transport, I guess the African equivalent of a city hopper, although I somewhat suspect it's nothing like a city hopper.
Absolutely. The point of the trip really was to use public transport that locals on the ground would be using. So I interacted with the locals as much as possible. So that went from sort of fairly new minibuses to flatbed trucks in places like Mozambique, dugout canoes to cross rivers, really a combination of anything.
And how did you manage? Two things spring to mind instantly. The first of all is obviously language. Obviously English is reasonably well understood, but I guess it kind of depends as to whereabouts in Africa. French could be a potential other language. How did you manage on that?
Yeah, there are regional blocks of languages, so French, Portuguese, English and Arabic are probably the main ones. So I did a little bit of practice for those other languages before I left, and actually people on the ground were really kind, and if they didn't speak any English, they would find somebody who did. Get them to translate for me.
Brushed up on the local equivalent of single to the next town, please.
Exactly. It's amazing what you can do with pointing as well.
Yeah, I guess so. What about currency? That's the other thing. Because presumably, you know, if there's no single currency particularly in Africa, how do you get on?
There are a couple of single currency blocks,
which are
the old French colonies, basically. It's every time you crossed the border, there'd be a man there ready and willing to swap what I was getting rid of for what I needed for the next country.
And your passport, I guess the moment you came back, you probably had to send off for a new one. You had that rarity of stamps dotting the pages.
Yeah, I actually, before I got back, I got stuck in Egypt needing a new passport because I ran out of pages.
There's no space left?
No space left by Egypt, which was sort of three quarters of the way round. So I had to sit there for a couple of weeks and wait for one to come and reach me.
Okay, so it didn't always go straight for, though. I gather you encountered some thieves ran by Senegal. What happened there?
Yeah, really a very basic scenario of two guys on the street obviously spotted me as not being local, and they tried to stop me so one of the guys could get his hands in my back pocket and take what actually wasn't in there. But it was quite a scary experience, and you know, they did sort of keep on at me for a couple of minutes, which felt obviously like a very long time.
Kind of a bit of a problem, but if you don't have anything to give, yet they're still determined to take it.
Well, I was very aware that in other pockets I had my passport and some money and a camera.
Yes.
So if they'd got violent about it, it could have been a lot worse, but I managed to sort of sprint up the road.
Right, they were just chances, were they?
Or do you think absolutely, just chances, seeing I wasn't local and taking what opportunity they could.
Yeah. The other incident which you mentioned in your book, or one of them at least, is you were mistaken for an undercover UN official. How does that happen?
Yes, it was...
you're undercover, you're not supposed to be found.
Well, that's true. It was the middle of the Liberian presidential election, which was only the second election after the Civil War there.
They're not really big on elections in Africa, really, are they?
Well, it's getting a lot better, I have to say. So basically, they could see again in Liberia I wasn't local, and they couldn't understand that I would just be there to experience and to travel around the country. So the logical conclusion was that I was a UN official checking that the voting was going correctly.
And obviously, did you see much of the sort of political state of some parts of Africa, and I guess also the poverty we so often hear about, which sometimes has gone. Contrast really with riches in other parts of that region.
Yeah, it's difficult to describe the poverty. I mean, it's not like people are out there just begging all the time. They're trying to improve their lives like we were, centuries ago. The difference is we're now in the 21st century, and it's really difficult for that to be happening and to walk past that and to know that, for example, if I were to give some guy on the street a bit of money, then I myself wouldn't be able to eat that night. So it was a difficult situation.
So just pick up on that. How did you finance yourself around Africa? Did you have savings which you were doing, or some work? How did that do? Were you hoping on large sales for the book when you got back?
I guess I'm a natural saver, and I knew probably 2 years before I went that I was going to do it, so a large chunk of the salary I was earning at the time was going into a sort of the Africa bank account. I had no external funding, no money from my parents or anything like that. This was purely funded by myself.
Did you run out of money at any stage?
I always had money in the bank, but on occasion I needed money to be sort of wired across to me in sort of Angola, which is, doesn't have the sort of credit card facilities that other countries will have, and is also incredibly expensive. It's one of the most expensive places on earth to go to.
Really?
Yeah.
I thought the Cambridge was bad, so Angola tops it.
Yeah, don't go to Luanda in Angola.
bear that in mind. So what happens? You then have to wait a couple of days for the money to turn up, or if you plan your journey so that the money gets wired to the next but two cities on your route?
Well, the wiring itself is pretty instantaneous, but I'd sort of have to be aware of how much money I had with me and
right.
how much I was likely to spend, which obviously not knowing what transport I was taking or where I was staying the night, that was an issue as well. And just sort of send an email home when I found an internet cafe, because I had no technology with me, and say, please, can you wire me some money?
And what are the connections like in internet cafes? Are they completely rubbish, or do they surprise us, perhaps?
I mean, it obviously does depend on where you are. Africa is a huge place.
Yes.
But generally, in the sort of bush and the small towns where I found myself most of the time, they're pretty awful, and getting onto a simple email system took minutes.
Mm-hmm. What was your highlight, would you say, overall, of the time you spent in Africa?
I really enjoyed the sort of area between Sierra Leone to Nigeria.
And where's that on the map?
So that's sort of West Africa.
Right, okay.
It's the bit of Africa you're not supposed to enjoy. It's supposed to be corrupt, and you get all these emails saying, come and, put your money in this Nigerian bank account. But the people there are so lovely, and they looked after me. They went way out of their way to look after me, buying me food and showing me directions, and they just wanted to send me home with a positive view of their countries.
That's really good. And now we've got the book, which is called Encircle Africa, Around Africa by Public Transport. Where can people get hold of this if they're interested?
So you can get that online from your obvious online stores, and there's a paperback and an ebook.
Okay, and it's this one here is marked $7.99. Is the ebook same price?
That's
or
right.
Slightly less?
The ebook is $4.99.
Okay, well, Ian Packham, thank you very much for coming in and chatting to Cambridge 105. Do you have any plans to go anywhere else?
I do. I'd quite like to sort of head across to Indonesia this time. I think, like Africa, it's a really diverse part of the world that perhaps we don't know very much about here.
Okay, that's great. Thanks very much for coming in.
Thank you.